You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, or Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked On, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game, it's very important, Millie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Raina Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from The Athletic, here with Sam Jam Packard, the great, formerly of WEEI. We got some Celtics Sixers to talk about. We're going to break down game one a little bit more. We're going to look ahead to game two, some tweaks that might be made, some changes the coaches could go to, some trends that might break up in game two, like Aaron Baines potentially not hitting 2 3-pointers like he did in game one.
Well, do you think Terry Rozier is going to shoot 7 of 9 from deep? The classic 78% shooting from beyond the arc? I think that's as pretty sustainable moving forward. Or I don't know about the Baines threes, but Tito three sticks is definitely going to do that for the rest of the series.
And so Tito in the Garden might. Tito in the Garden is a special force that, unlike anything the world has ever seen, Tito in the Garden shows up in Drew Bledsoe jersey and then works you over. So, yeah, Terry Rozier will definitely. The crazy thing about Terry Rozier, though, and obviously I'm being facetious about him shooting 77% the rest of the series, the crazy thing was he had 3 successful lobs in the same game.
One after an extremely fancy dribble.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still stunned by that. I don't know whether to be more stunned by that or Baines' 3-pointers or Ojale splashing a corner 3 or Marcus Smart ripping a rebound away from Joel Embiid and going up for an and-one. There were a lot of unsustainable things from game one. But I also thought the Celtics like just really outplayed the 76ers on both sides of the court. So we'll talk about some of the strengths that the Celtics showed. I think one of the biggest things to me is like the 76ers, their defense has been great all year. They're 3rd in defense overall. They were 2nd after the All-Star break behind just the Utah Jazz. They've gotten stops all year long, and they're super long, like huge. But what was interesting to me is the Celtics downsized, and they went to Tito and Shane Larkin for more minutes together than they'd played in any other postseason game. And while those two guys were on the court, the Celtics scored 158 points per 100 possession.
Woo!
So, which is just outrageous. And like, I know the Sixers have length, and I know they'll defend a lot better than they did in game one. They were just at times lackadaisical. But I wonder if the Celtics' speed will be an issue for them because they don't play a point guard. Like, obviously, Ben Simmons plays point guard for them and he can really handle the ball. But he's not as shifty as a Terry Rozier, as a Shane Larkin. The other guys on their team, like Redick, Bellinelli, Covington can guard sometimes. But you really put a lot of stress on their defense, the more smaller guys you have out there. So I'm interested to see whether the Celtics can continue to have that success with all the speed. It felt like their speed was a real issue for Philadelphia in game one.
Yeah, the Sixers matchups against the Celtics defensively were kind of confusing to me. They started off with Covington, I think, on Rozier and J.J. Redick on Tatum. And then as soon as Marco Bellinelli entered the game, it just felt like the Celtics did everything in their power to attack him. And I don't know what exactly the answer is for the Sixers, because you're right, they don't have a lot of guard depth. I don't think TJ McConnell is the answer. I was looking at lineups earlier today, and just all of their worst defensive lineups pretty much include TJ McConnell. So I don't know, like, and he's the guy with who he might have more speed. I don't think the answer is Fultz. He didn't even play. It doesn't seem like he's ready. So I don't know what the like, other than just better effort
and maybe
better
it's,
execution.
Maybe it's just play better. Maybe it's just the Celtics.
I think that's the key thing, is just play better, because they left a lot of wide open shots for the Celtics. Terry Rozier, like, it felt like half of his threes were super open. But, like, what's the deal with Marco Bellinelli? It feels like as soon as he stepped on the court, the Celtics were just attacking him in switches, attacking the mismatch. And I just don't know what the Sixers do, because he feels like, especially in that Heat series, him getting hot and him shooting three-pointers was important for the Sixers. They need those guys like Redick, like Bellinelli, like Ilyasova to make shots. But if they're not going to be playing top-notch defense, I just don't know what they do. Jason Tatum got to the line more so than I can remember any time in the playoffs or just like in recent kind of the second half of the season. And that's because he was just able to attack players like Bellinelli and players like Redick. And so they have this problem where they don't have enough of the quicker guys, like you mentioned, enough of the guards. But then they have this kind of a size mismatch because they decide to put Covington on the point guard, and then someone like Tatum gets smaller guys against them. So I don't know what the exact adjustment is. The matchups really seem to be favoring the Celtics in the series, but that's easy to say after a game one where the Celtics made an insane amount of threes and the 76ers just didn't really make that many.
Yeah, and I think one area to watch moving forward is the Sixers' offensive rebounding. Like, they're huge, and I do think the Celtics are going to try to play small at times, and until Jaylen Brown gets back, they're going to have to play really small. He might be back by game two, who knows, but the Sixers are just, they're just really strong and really big, and they can get rebounds in a way that Milwaukee just couldn't. Like, Milwaukee is one of the worst rebounding teams in the league. The Philly is just totally, totally opposite of that. Dario Saric beasted the Celtics a couple of times. Embiid, obviously, is just mammoth human. So they have a lot of guys who can get offensive rebounds and hurt you in that way. So I'm interested to see what happens there, if the Celtics can hold up, especially when they move Al Horford to center. And as far as, like, I do want to see what happens when the Sixers are locked in. The one play that stood out to me in game one was when there was an out-of-bounds violation and Marcus Smart was just like, ooh, nobody's getting back on defense. Let me just run this up the court and draw a defender, and then I'll pitch it to Terry Rozier, who's wide open. And that was when you were like, are they ready for this series? Are the 76ers still, like, in rest mode after 6 days off? So it wasn't Philadelphia's best effort. They'll play a lot better. But I am definitely interested to see what happens with the speed, especially, like, with who they guard, who they choose to put Bellinelli on, who they choose to put Redick on, and who guards Rozier. Like, Rozier is faster, I think, than any defender they have. And I know Simmons is a really talented defender, and I know Covington is a really good defender. But Covington had trouble staying in front of Rozier. And I don't know whether that'll happen for all the games, but it definitely happened in game one. And the Celtics, like, they hit a ton of shots, and they got shots from weird guys at times, like Baines. But they also manufactured some really good looks, and they were really successful at the rim and drawing free throws, especially Tatum. So they had a much, much more successful offensive night than I expected once I heard that Jaylen Brown was definitely ruled out.
Yeah, the shot making was kind of insane. I mean, just when you talk about Baines took in the first half, took a three from the top of the key, which was awesome, just because Embiid was pretty much in the restricted area and he was just forcing him to do something. But the shot making from the Celtics, especially in the first half, I thought they made some more difficult shots, some difficult mid-range Tatum. But you're right, they did a lot better at finishing around the rim and just getting to the line and attacking more. I think it's key, and the matchup I was watching all night was Embiid and Horford, and just kind of tracking how the Celtics did when Embiid was off the court, how the Celtics did when Horford was off the court. But Horford's ability to make threes and draw Embiid out made it so the Celtics had a much easier time of attacking the rim and getting to the line. And Embiid just really wants to be that rim protector, but Horford's ability to kind of pick and pop, we saw there was one backbreaker where Embiid really was going after the ball handler and just left Horford wide open. It's going to be interesting to track those because I think the Celtics can punish the 76ers by going small and kind of drawing Embiid out and then attacking the rim. It's going to be huge the moments when Horford's not in the game and Embiid is in the game, and it's Embiid versus Baines. I think the 76ers had a clear advantage there. You saw in the third quarter Embiid doing just basically dominating for a stretch, but someone other than Embiid is going to have to score points for the 76ers because it's not going to be – I don't think it's going to be Ben Simmons because he refuses to shoot the ball, and the Celtics are doing a damn good job of building a wall against him. It's going to have to be other players to step up and make shots. You would assume it'd be J.J. Redick, but they can't get zeros from Covington. And I think the X factor I expect to have a better game in game two and moving forward is Saric. I think he's the type of guy who can play inside and outside. He can knock down threes. And you mentioned his offensive rebounding capabilities. I think they're going to want to get him going more and have him be more aggressive because other than Embiid, they're going to need shot making from the outside. And I don't know who the guy is going to be to step up because I don't think it's Bellinelli. I just don't think they can play him and keep him on the court. So it has to be someone who's still pretty stout defensively. And I have more belief in Saric being a kind of a quality player than I do Covington. It was funny watching, I think saw just 76ers Twitter kind of blow up every time Covington missed a shot. And they're like, this is the most predictable Covington playoff game in the history of time.
Yeah, but Covington's good. So I think he'll play a lot.
He's not great. He's a very good defender, but he's like a very streaky shooter.
And he struggled defensively against the Celtics in game one. That was something that was surprising to me. One thing that stood out to me when I watched the tape, Embiid, he closed out short a lot. And I know the play you were talking about where Larkin drew kind of a double team on a pick and roll, and Horford was pretty wide open. But there were other times when Embiid just kind of closed out short, once on Terry Rozier, another time on Horford. And I don't think he can afford to do that against those guys. So it'll be interesting to see how he guards the arc the rest of the series, because obviously the Celtics will go small at times and they'll force him to guard the arc. And I obviously he's a really, really good defender. He's a really talented defender. But I think it'll be interesting the cat and mouse game as they try to draw him out there and find opportunities against him out there.
Do you think Embiid's in shape? It felt like kind of towards the end of each of his, I guess, shifts, he looked kind of tired. He had some careless turnovers. And you talk about not closing out as hard. This is like a guy who's never played this many minutes in a series. Like, this is the most he's ever done. He's always been on minutes restrictions. He's a big lumbering guy. We know like how much effort he puts in. Imagine just having to bully Aaron Baines in the post. That's got to be pretty tiring. It felt like he was kind of especially later in the game, not as playing with as much energy. And then Ben Simmons, I think, played 42 minutes and didn't really get a rest in the second half whatsoever. I thought he was a little bit tired and lackadaisical there at the end and frustrated. I was kind of taken aback by the Sixers' lack of depth because after Ilyasova and Bellinelli, they don't have that many guys that you can really turn to. The big dog, I'm a huge fan, but he has a terrible 5 minutes. And so the Sixers are really going to rely on these guys, especially Simmons and Embiid, to kind of carry them. But I don't know if it was so much days off and then just like they just weren't like back in playing shape or weren't like ready for the speed of playoff basketball. But I just didn't think they looked great in any stretch of the game. Even when Embiid was dominant, he's kind of petered out there. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just overanalyzing a one game sample size, but what did you think of like Embiid's, I guess, I don't want to say effort, but his stamina, his endurance, both him and Simmons?
Yeah, I don't know about the stamina. Obviously, they broke down a little bit toward the end and kind of let go of the rope, I think, a little bit. Once the Celtics had every answer down the stretch. There were a few times the Sixers cut it to 6, to 8, to 10, and felt like they might challenge, but the Celtics always had an answer. I don't know about the stamina thing, but there's a lot on Embiid's plate, and the way the Celtics are guarding him, he's just got to do it all himself. Like, they're not going to send double teams. That's that seems pretty clear. Like, he got cooking for a little while, and the Celtics were still like, all right, like, you can cook if you're going to cook, but we're going to try to guard the arc, and we're going to try to limit everybody else, and that's kind of how we have to play. I thought one of the most important stats, and I know the 76ers will shoot a lot better. They won't hit just five threes in a lot of games this series. One of the most important numbers to me was 26, which was the three-point attempts that the 76ers had. That was one of their lowest numbers since getting Bellinelli and since getting Ilyasova. They've been up near the lead in three-point attempts. And so the Celtics did a great job of limiting those opportunities. And I know the 76ers still missed a lot of pretty open looks, but it felt like the Celtics were really dialed in that sense. And in transition especially, like, the Sixers have been killing people in transition. The Celtics were money in transition. They actually got the better of the transition matchup, which was pretty stunning to me, given how the 76ers have played lately. I think also the 76ers, like, I feel like they were feeling themselves. Like, they'd won 20 to 21 games. I think they looked around and they were like, okay, the Celtics have all these injuries. The Cavs, like, they only have LeBron. The Raptors are the Raptors, and they were kind of like,
Vegas is all on their back, favoring them to win a series in which they don't have home court. They're definitely feeling themselves. They had Meek Mill ringing the bell. They were riding high.
Yeah, and so I think that was a wake-up call for them, it felt like. Like, ooh, these guys are going to play more defense than the Heat did, and they've got more size, and probably even without Jaylen Brown and Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. Jesus, I'm a little tired. Even without all those guys, they still have some really talented creators. Like Jason Tatum, the last few games, it seems like he's starting to like realize his powers a little bit and just kind of be like, ooh, look at all the things I could do.
I can attack off the dribble anytime I want.
Yeah, it seems like he's been really hunting out mismatches and trying to do all those things lately. He's made himself very, very tough to guard. Like, he's always been tough to guard, but he's just putting more and more stress on defenses, it feels like. And Terry Rozier, obviously, like, 7-3s, all that. But to me, he's getting into the lane. He's making plays for the Celtics. The Celtics need that so desperately right now. And they're kind of relying on Rozier and Tatum a lot. And Horford, obviously, is huge. Horford, the last couple of games, like,
he's insane.
Yeah, and he's flexing on people. Al Horford is flexing on people.
It's his go-to move now. And it's so, like, playoff Horford's awesome. But he was, talking about, like, efficiency and exactly when the Celtics needed it. Like, he came in after sitting on the bench for a while in the second quarter, and had a great run, and then had a stop or a great kind of 5-0 run himself in the fourth quarter. He's been fantastic. And so I don't know, like, I don't know if having Al Horford score 30 points or Al Horford, Rozier, and Tatum score 30 points is going to happen in game two, but I'm kind of confused and about what exactly the Sixers adjustments will be moving forward, other than just like more effort on the defensive end.
Yeah, I Joel Embiid kind of just blurted out that he thinks they're going to switch everything moving into the future. I don't know if that's a play, because,
like, doesn't that just mean Terry Rozier's dribbling past Joel Embiid, and then, or you have, like, I just don't know if that's. And then if they switch everything, they still have the problem of you have Marco Bellinelli on Jason Tatum, or you have J.J. Redick on Jason Tatum. Like, they were switching everything other than, like, pick and rolls that involved Embiid. I don't know if that exactly is the problem solver there.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes if they try it. They definitely did struggle to defend Al Horford pick and pops, and they gave him a lot of separation, obviously. And there was another pick and roll, like the Larkin and Horford pick and roll, where Horford ended up wide open. And there were a couple times Horford got caught lobs. So they had a lot of trouble defending that. So maybe switching is a better answer. Maybe they'll just have to make guys make great individual plays. But it'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward with that. I'm also interested to see how the Marcus Smart game within a game goes, because the 76ers are daring him to shoot as much as I've seen anybody dare him to shoot. And everybody dares him to shoot. But the 76ers are going like so far out of their way to be like, please, 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 Marcus, like take that one.
Yeah, and he's doing it because he's Marcus Smart, and you can't dare him to do anything. You never – Marcus Smart, every single game of Truth or Dare has chosen Dare. And anytime, he's always, like, done it. And I think that that's just a case of, like, Brad Stevens coaching. I think Marcus Smart is going to take some of those threes. What was he, 2 for 8 in the game from three? And I think Brad has to tell Marcus, hey, let's try to work for a better shot. But I think Marcus has to keep – shooting just to keep them a little bit honest. I mean, really, you see, well, on the other end of the court, Ben Simmons just like refusal to shoot. I think it makes it so much easier for the Celtics to play defense. They can help off of Ben Simmons. Like, they can build that wall and just kind of stand in at the free throw line, and he's not going to do anything. And I think Ben Simmons would be so much more dangerous. I don't care what percentage he shot if he just occasionally pulled up from three. Like, his unwillingness to even attempt a three just makes the game so much easier. So I think, like, daring Marcus Smart to shoot is, I think, in the long run, a better strategy for the Sixers. But at some, he's going to shoot them, and he's going to make them occasionally. I just think it's not going to be the be-all, end-all of the like, – it's not going to be the end of the Celtics offense if Marcus Smart chucks a couple threes. That's what Marcus Smart does for his entire career. He's been chucking threes. I think the Celtics can kind of – find the workaround, but the fact that he's just willing to shoot, I think just like it changes people how you guard him and kind of opens up space for him more when he does decide to attack. So I don't know. I don't think it's like the biggest deal in the world. I'm all for if someone's giving you that shot, you're an NBA player, you really should be taking it.
Yeah.
Taking it with confidence. And that's what Marcus Smart does, because he does everything confidently.
He does do things confidently. I thought he had a really bad first half.
He was trash. He was garbage. A lot of dumb turnovers from Marcus Smart.
Dumb turnovers. Forced passes
where they should never have been thrown.
Forced passes. He fouled Redick on a three. Like, he had some rough, rough mistakes in the first half, and then totally redeemed himself by big boy Joel Embiid for that rebound and one. Classic Marcus Smart. Just an absurd play. How many guards in the league could make that play? Just very... very entertaining. Classic Marcus Smart. So I thought I was being like, ooh, sneaky reporter. Let's ask Marcus Smart after the scrum if he talked to Bill Russell. And he was like, yeah, I didn't even know he was there. I was so focused on the game. I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, that's a legend, though. I wish I'd seen him. I wish I'd known he was there. But classic Marcus Smart, like, had no clue that Bill Russell was there because he was just too focused on the game. Just blacked out in his competitive zest.
That's what happens to Marcus Smart, is he never remembers what happens in the game because he is just filled with rage.
Yeah.
I thought another good anecdote from Jay King of The Athletic. Tell the folks about Yabu's outfit post-game.
I mean, he was looking very dapper. He had on the turtleneck underneath the a nice little a dark blazer, and he was walking out of the arena, and Jason Tatum called him over so that he could take a picture of Yabu in his dapper outfit. And then Terry Rozier, while Yabu was walking over to Tatum, was like, yo, you gotta wear that shit next game, bro. it was a wonderful sequence of events. Like, everyone just stunned to see Yabu dress so well. Yabu thought it was going to be a podium game for him, I think.
Yabu were dressed up nice for the playoffs. Normally he's just in the bucket hat casually, but I like that. I got one more question. Do you expect Jaylen Brown to return for game two? Because I do. It seems like he has been lobbying to play ever since game seven. And then what is his possible return do for the Celtics? Because I would imagine good things. Jaylen Brown, pretty solid basketball player.
Yeah, I think it just gives you more options. One, to defend the arc. Like, Jaylen Brown is one of their most athletic guys, one of their best defenders. A guy who can chase Redick and Bellinelli around screens, or if you need him to, switch on to Ben Simmons and be a physical presence on him. So I think he's a big deal defensively. I think scoring-wise, he's a big deal. I think he's another guy that can give Redick and Bellinelli athletic problems. So I think Jaylen Brown, in this series, in any series, he's a big deal, but it feels like in this series especially, he's maybe an even bigger deal, even if it didn't feel like that in game one when the Celtics were just blitzing the 76ers without him. I don't know whether he will play. Hamstrings are tricky, man. I know he's been lobbying to play, but the Celtics want him to be cautious. Obviously, the schedule worked out nicely, where they get two days in between games and give him an extra day to recover and get better. But I think they want to make sure that he's able to play without the potential of re-injury when he gets back. Because hamstrings, man, those things can really, really linger, and you can just keep tweaking them and never gets better. So Brad Stevens has always tried to be cautious with hamstrings. So we'll see.
Yeah, didn't Jalen say that he's like trying to come back from like a what would normally be a 2 week injury in 2 days? Like I can imagine the Celtics being very cautious, but I just don't know. I think they need him if they're gonna eventually win this series, which after game one, the 76ers are still favored by the fine folks in Las Vegas to win the series. And we never got an official prediction from your boy, Jay King, the kid. So I was curious what you think is going to happen in this series. We saw you have the luck of having seen game one and you being able to take that into your prediction. But so what's the official prediction? Both John and I said Celtics in seven, but that's just because we're both huge homers. You're an objective journalist, so I want to hear your prediction.
So before the series, I said Sixers in six. Game one may have impacted the way I look at things.
Don't may have anything. Tell me definitively what your new prediction is. Is it still Sixers in six?
I'm not a huge prediction guy. I'll stick with Sixers in six. I'll pretend like I gave that before the series, and I'll stick with Sixers in six.
So you think that the Sixers can come into Boston and take a game in Boston? It felt like the Sixers, I don't know if they were shook with the moment or it was kind of the rest thing or all the things we were talking about, but Joel Embiid was quite dismissive of the Boston crowd and didn't think it had any of impact. But
I like Joel Embiid's. I like his spirit, man. Like he just.
I like his candor too. He's always been quite honest.
Yeah, I respect Joel Embiid. He just kind of says things. He doesn't really care who he upsets. He just kind of has the utmost confidence in himself and his team, and he'll let people know that.
Here's another guy you love. I know for a fact. You just talk about listening to Brett Brown before and after the game. I was sitting next to you during pregame availability, and there's just a big grin on your face listening to Brett Brown talk. You love that man.
I mean, he speaks in a way that makes me feel bad about my writing because he speaks. He doesn't.
He speaks in stories. He was asked about Marcus Smart, and he's just like, I've been like recruiting, watching Kansas film, going back. And we saw Oklahoma State, and then it's just like a perfect transition into talking about like Marcus Smart, the winner, and the like basically impacts winning. And he's got the coolest accent I've ever heard. That like it's half Maine, half Boston, half Australian, and it makes zero sense.
Yeah, and then everything he does, he just speaks in a poetic way, and he just makes me feel really bad about my writing because he speaks better than I write, and.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, he speaks in an absurd accent. I'm just trying to think of questions that I can get him to say fun words like arbitrary or just like things that really draw out the accent. But I'm usually too shy to ask anything, especially during the playoffs.
Today he had a great quote. Somebody asked him about Horford picking pops and whether they should bring a third guy to help defend, like rotate someone over. And he kind of like said – you know, do you switch? Do you half switch? Do you late switch? Do you bring a third guy over? And he goes, "There's death in the back end of that." I love this guy, man. There's death in the back end of that. Like just what a line that is. Just an unreal line. So Brett Brown, especially
compared to Brad Stevens, who it feels like has gotten says less and less with each of his press conferences. He pulled out. the classic Belichick and named every single player on the Raptors, even giving Timothy Luwawu a shout out. But the comparison of their two press conferences was awesome because it was Stevens just being like giving one word answers and Brett Brown going on some nice soliloquies.
Yeah, I'm a big Brett Brown soliloquy guy. That man can speak. So shout out to Brett Brown. Shout out to the difference between him and Joe Prunty, man. Joe Prunty was not a very great quote, but Brett Brown is deeply quotable.
And that makes your life easier. It makes my life easier in terms of rain and chunk. So I'm all for it. The Sixers series, it just felt like game one was like in the building was so much more intense than game seven of the Bucks series. It's like maybe like the Celtics fans think it's more legit now or more real, but it feels like the intensity has been raised, and especially with the not a rookie chance with Simmons and Tatum. I don't know. I like the building, the budding rivalry, and it's kind of crazy that the Sixers, you can see them getting a lot better next year because they have the potential to add someone like LeBron. That's all the Sixers fans are talking about. But even if they don't, they can still have a bunch of cap space. They could go after someone like Klay Thompson or I don't know. People are talking about crazy Kawhi trades that I'm not really buying into yet.
Paul George would be such a perfect fit over there.
And so they have the potential to get that much better. And then the Celtics are returning Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. So you have to imagine that these two teams are going to play each other in the playoffs for years to come. So I'm liking the intensity of game one. And I imagine it's just destined to go seven. And it's going to be a pretty intense matchup. I'm excited for the first Ben Simmons, Marcus Smart fight. I don't know when it's going to happen. I'm thinking somewhere around game three. But they were getting a little testy at the end of the first half, at the end of the game. Simmons gave him a little shove. I'm just excited for this kind of the start of this rivalry.
I feel like Simmons gets into it with a lot of guys. He got into it with
Simmons is kind of mad online. Like, he loves video games, and he's frequently mad. So you put them together, he's mad online. And it's great. I'm all for it. The Bucks didn't have enough emotion for me.
Yeah, but this series has it all. This series has emotion. This series has Aaron Baines three-pointers. This series has Brett Brown soliloquies. just the voice of an angel.
What more can you want?
The voice of an angel, that guy. So, yeah, I think we'll wrap it up there. We are the Locked On Celtics podcast. If you don't subscribe to us, search wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, wherever else. We're the only Monday through Friday Celtics podcast, the greatest Celtics podcast ever. And we'll talk to you tomorrow again, like we always do, except when it's the weekend. Take care. I love you all.
If you don't subscribe, you're stupid.
And I love you all.